Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time, all of the latest J2 news coming up. I'm John Steele and I'm joined for the first time in a while by James Taylor. I think, James, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks John. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. It's been a while, James. Quite a lot has happened. I noticed we've made it to round 19 pretty much halfway through the season. Not sure how that happened. It's all going frighteningly quickly.
Yeah, it's all blurred into a bit of a mush for me. But yeah, it's been almost half a season already.
yeah, plenty to get our teeth into this week as ever. James, I think without further ado then, we'll start our kind of roundup of J2 round 19, last weekend's games. We're going to talk about three of the, I don't know if we could call them the bigger games, James, necessarily, but we decided we're going to look at the sort of bottom of the table, the last three places for our kind of picks of the week this time. And yeah, happily for yourself, James, we're going to start by talking about Kanazawa 2, Iwate 1. That's because Iwate are bottom of the table, aren't they, and stay bottom after they conceded a late winner here. Kanazawa well on top in the first half, it seemed. Masamichi Hayashi thought he'd put them ahead about 5 minutes before the break, but Iwate's keeper Nobuyuki Abe, who was making his first appearance of the season, made a superb save, and we're going to talk more about Abe in a moment. It was just a temporary reprieve, though, that save from Hayashi, because Kanazawa went in front in first half stoppage time. A bad miskick from Taisuke Nakamura put Kanazawa on the attack, and Hayashi then played in Shintaro Shimada, who fired in at Abe's near post to make it 1-0. Around the hour mark, Shimada nearly added a second for the home side, but ended up hitting the post. But then there was a sucker punch for Kanazawa in the 71st minute when Iwate equalised, Paul Bismarck Tabinas heading in a corner from the impressive Tsubasa Yuge. So 1-1 with about 20 minutes to go. But then there was late drama. Honoya Shoji poked in a loose ball to make it 2-1 to Kanazawa with about 10 minutes left. This is after Yohei Toyoda had headed the ball back across the goal. Possibly a bit controversial because Kanazawa substitute Shion Niwa had collided with Iwate's keeper Abe moments before the ball went in. And the ball actually went over the line with Abe in a sort of prone position in pain on the ground. He ended up being stretchered off with a suspected concussion. I think he's tweeted since that he's okay, so we don't need to worry about him too much. Kenta Matsuyama came off the bench as a substitute keeper for the closing stages. Then Iwate threw everything at Kanazawa, didn't they? James Tabinas saw another header, hit the top of the crossbar, and Kanazawa keeper Yuto Shirai had to make an excellent save to keep out a pile driver for about 25 yards. I think that was Yuge who put in that shot. I'm not sure, but I think so. But it finished Kanazawa 2, Iwate 1. Iwate still in deep trouble at the bottom, and Kanazawa up into the dizzy heights of 7th. James, Kanazawa 2, Iwate 1. I believe you're at this game, so take it away.
Yeah, this was fun. I was at this game. My son and I made a kind of late-ish decision to go after I showed him a picture of the Iwate mascot, that funny giant origami crane. And he decided he wanted to go. So yeah, we went, and you're right, Kanazawa did kind of control the ball in the first half. But yeah, only had one goal to show for it. It was a good one, though. And I think also that was a good example of the link-up between Kyohei Sugiura and Hayashi. They've been working really well as strike partners, while Toyoda has been injured, because previously it was Hayashi and Toyoda as the starting pair. But yeah, only one goal to show for it. Was a bit disappointing, bearing in mind how much of the ball we had and how little Iwate offered really in the first half. Kazuya Onohara had a couple of good chances as well. One was deflected just wide and one was well saved by Abe. And Shimada had a had a shot from a good position, but sent it miles over. But then they brought on Brenner and Bismarck in the second half, and they seemed like a completely different team. They had a lot more about them in attack, and which makes me wonder why those two didn't get more game time and why they don't get more game time generally, because I think Brenner hasn't played a full 90 minutes since match day 17 and before that match day 13. Bismarck has only played one full game this season, although he's still quite young, I think, isn't he? So maybe that's why. But they're a big physical presence, a lot of attacking intent, and they caused a lot of problems. And once who had to equalise, there was a period when I was kind of thinking, oh, this is going to end badly, and I was ready to blame it on you from your pod last week when you said what can go wrong against you out there. So it's a lucky escape for you. Mm. And it was kind of another soft goal, really. I mean, it was a good header from the corner, but sort of kind of soft defending from that corner. But then the goal, the winner was a good one. Again, it was Ryuhei Oishi, who's been very impressive as a substitute this season, who put in a cross for Toyoda at the back post. It's good to have him back. And he headed it back in towards the goal. And yeah, I'm surprised it was allowed, actually, with the goalie getting injured in the play. But I think it might have been because he also collided with a defender as well as with Niwa. I think there were several bodies involved. But generally, if there's any contact with the goalie, the ref blows the whistle straight away. So I'm very surprised that he allowed that one. But yeah, it was that move, the cross to the far post and the header back across. We used that a lot early in the season. And then while Toyota's been injured, we haven't really seen much of it. So it's good to see Toyota back and good to see that move back and working again. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Onohara was really, really good. Actually, I mentioned him just now. He was involved heavily in the attack, and he was also... He's a really hard worker. He was very, very good defensively, especially when we were under pressure towards the end. There was one moment when I think the left-back, Nagamine, kind of stepped up to try and make an interception and misjudged it and was caught out of position. But Onohara was there with a covering slide tackle to clear up the mess. That was a really good moment. So, yeah, we're unbeaten in three at home now, three in home and away. We're up to seventh, which is good. We've got Toyota back, which is great, because we've got a busy week coming up. Hiramatsu limped off in the second half, but hopefully it was just because he was a bit tired and not because he's injured. But we haven't seen anything announced about that. But yeah, we did well to hold on. And I think for Iwate, I wonder... Well, the manager in his post match comments, he complained about the timing of the goal they conceded. Another poor time to concede, having held on so well under so much pressure for the first half. And you think, well, those are the sorts of things that happen to teams down the bottom of the table, or maybe teams down the bottom of the table are down there because of these things happen. Kind of the vicious circle that I'm sure we'll talk about when we talk about the other games tonight as well. So I'm not sure really what they can do. They need to put a few results together like Omiya and Ryukyu did. Those two haven't really moved away very much. But yeah, I'm not really sure what they can do. Just keep. They're a hard-working team. They just don't have... I don't think they've got enough quality.
Yeah, it's tricky. And I think it's interesting the point you make. I actually noticed this as well from the weekend, is that the teams at the top, you know, when they needed late winners, they dug deep and they got them. So not to jump ahead, but, you know, Sendai, Yokohama FC, for example. Whereas at the bottom, and we're going to talk about another team that did similar in a moment, but yeah, it just seems to be that thing when you're top of the league or near the top and you're winning, late goals go for you. And when you're down at the bottom and you're struggling, it's the opposite, isn't it? You contrive sort of new and ever increasing ways of sort of throwing points away. But yeah, I was kind of in a way, James, pleased to hear you say you thought that goal might have been disallowed, because I thought I was going to ask you about that, and I thought it might be you might stonewall me and deny, you know, say you hadn't seen it clearly or something. But, yeah,
no, it's right in front of me. Actually, finally got to see goals right in front from us.
You're shouting play on frantically behind the goal. Yeah, I think it's a funny thing about the J League, and something we could talk about another time probably. But it was something I noticed compared to sort of mainland European, or what you and I grew up probably calling continental football. I think goalkeepers get a bit less protection here generally. And I think the J League is a kind of weird sort of halfway house between England and Europe. I grew up watching a lot of Italian football, and like if you jump near the goalkeeper, it's a free kick. You know, if you're in the same sort of if you're in the penalty area of the goalkeeper, you know, the referee's ready to give a foul against you. So yeah, I don't know. I thought that was a strange one, but perhaps like you say, you know, he collided Abe, the goalkeeper, and luckily he's okay. He's not injured, not badly injured, but he collided with the defender as well. And it was all accidental, we should say. I don't think Shion was out to, you know, hurt him or anything. Of course, yeah, can't say anything bad about Shion. But yeah, it's just one of those things. It just seems to be one of those things that happens to you when you're down at the bottom of the bottom of the table, doesn't it? Yeah. But yeah, Cannizzaro going well, as you said. And Iwate, yeah, I was going to ask you if you thought you could see a kind of way out of it for them, because I got the same vibes from watching them a few times this season. Mainland has, but very hard-working team, but just lacking the cutting edge or the quality that's going to get them the goals they need, the points they need. And I think, you know, it really, again, you know, if you compare them to Akita, it shows how Akita do have a lot of quality, even if it's kind of hidden or you have to look closely to find it. Because I think if you look at how Akita did last year and how they've done this year, you know, compared to the struggles Iwate are having, perhaps you can see, you know, there is a bit of a gap between those two. But Iwate, do you give them any chance of getting out of the bottom two, James, or is it going to be too hard for them, do you think?
I wouldn't say there's no chance, but I purely because the most of the table is so bunched together that a couple of good results for Iwate and a couple of good results for another team would see them pretty much caught up. So it's not impossible, but it's very unlikely, I think, just because, yeah, like I said, that hard work can get you quite far in J2, as we've seen with Akita and Tochigi as well, to a lesser extent, I think. But I don't think, yeah, like you said, Iwate don't have the quality that those teams have. So I think it's going to be really hard for them.
Yeah, fair enough. I see they brought in a young defender on loan from FC Tokyo, haven't they, this week? Iwate, but I think you're right, and I think it's perhaps at the other end where they should be looking to bring in some reinforcements, because they do look a little bit lightweight in attack. Brenner, not lightweight in any but yeah, in terms of goals, they're struggling, aren't they? Okay, well that's Iwate relegated. Only kidding, James. They've still got plenty of time, plenty of games to turn it around. Let's talk about the team who is second bottom after 19 rounds. It's FC Ryukyu, and their game the weekend against Tokushima was an absolute cracker, wasn't it? It finished Ryukyu 3, Tokushima 3. What a game. So much to talk about. This one was 1-1 at half-time after each side had scored a penalty, but both teams had actually had chances to score before that, hadn't they? Shunto Kodama had a couple of good shots saved for Tokushima. And at the other end, Yuki Omoto hit the post for Ryukyu after something that I don't think I've ever seen before, a mistake from Tokushima's keeper, Jose Aurelio Suarez, usually very reliable, but he miskicked, and it nearly led to a goal for Ryukyu. In the 38th minute, though, Ryukyu remembered that they had the self-destruct button and they weren't afraid to use it. Centre-back Lee Yong-jik tried to be a bit too clever on the edge of his own penalty area. He presented the ball to Kodama, I think it was, and ended up pulling his shirt for a penalty. I thought this was a pretty soft decision, to be honest, James, but if you pull somebody's shirt, you know, you're asking for trouble, and I think Lee Yong-jik probably deserved to concede a penalty just for sheer stupidity, really. But anyway, Kazunari Ichimi scored it, and it was 1-0. But Ryukyu got their own penalty in the third minute of first half stoppage time when Kazuki Nishiya clipped Keita Tanaka, or did he? I think he would have caught him if Tanaka hadn't jumped out of the way. So I think it probably was a penalty, even if there wasn't any contact. And Koki Kiyotake scored that for 1-1 at the break. In the second half, Ryukyu went in front with a brilliant low curling strike from the edge of the box from Katsuya Nakano. Absolutely brilliant goal. That was in the 52nd minute. And then, James, the last 5 minutes plus stoppages is when things got really nutty, isn't it? Yeah, in the 85th minute, Tanaka carelessly gave the ball away in the right-back position, and Ryukyu couldn't clear their lines, and Tokushima's captain Eiji Shirai slammed the ball in inside the penalty area for 2-2. Less than 60 seconds later, Ryukyu were back in front with an absolute thunderbolt from about 30 yards from Yu Tomidokoro, an absolute goal of the season contender, a real rasping sort of rising drive. So yeah, 3-2 to the home side going into stoppage time. Things were pretty frantic at this point. Ryukyu's keeper Junto Taguchi had to claw out a header from Kaka to preserve that 3-2 lead. But Tokushima ended up equalising with the very last touch of the game. In the 96th minute, Naoto Arai headed in a corner to make it 3-3, a typical J-League. And we should mention, I think, only 5 minutes of additional time were signalled, but Tokushima equalised in the 96th. So that's what happens when you're down at the bottom. It finished Ryukyu 3, Tokushima 3. Ryukyu second bottom and 3 points adrift of safety. Only one defeat in their last five, though, so it's not all bad, although it probably does feel quite bad at the moment. Tokushima are 15th. They haven't won any of their last five either. James, I think you watched this one in full on the replay, so where do we start?
There are a lot of... I know it's a cliche to like, taking the positives and stuff, but there are a lot of good things that Ryukyu did in this game. Scoring three against the best defence in J2 is a good thing. And coming back after they conceded the second to make it 2-2, to then score a third a minute later is a really good thing. They attacked pretty well throughout the game, Ryukyu, but then attack's never not really been their problem this season, has it? Problem's been at the other end, which is, you can see it again in this game, conceding three to... Tokushima's attack is not particularly high scoring this year, generally. So it's not great to concede three to them. Well, they're a good team. But yeah, and the soft penalties, I don't know what Yongjit was thinking. But then in the minutes leading up to that, he'd already done a couple of dodgy back passes. So not entirely surprised that he would go and do something like that. And also, well, when James was on a few weeks ago, we highlighted Yongjit as having had a good game in their win against Tochigi, but usually when he's mentioned on here, it's because he's made a mistake, and I don't know what he was thinking. It was just stupid. It was a soft penalty, but it's still a penalty. And those kind of soft penalties, again, it's the vicious circle. Teams at the bottom seem to concede soft penalties, which is why they're at the bottom. And then because at the bottom, they start panicking more in defence and conceding those kind of unnecessary penalties. I saw it a lot last year with Kanazawa. I think you see it a lot with a lot of teams who are in Ryukyu's situation. And they've got to do something about their defence, haven't they, Ryukyu? Their attack, I think also they should be pleased, because I know that Ryukyu supporters probably were very worried about where the goals were coming from after Yuki Kusano got injured a few weeks ago. But others, if these guys are going to step up and keep scoring, then they don't need... perhaps to worry too much until Kusano comes back, and if Abe can come back as well sometime, because I think he's out injured. Yeah, there was also good. Ikeda and Omoto were putting some good moves together. They were connecting quite well in the attack for the Ryukyu. Yeah, it was impressive that they were able to retake the lead just a minute after conceding their equaliser, but then to concede with the last touch of the game from a corner. I mean, you know what's going to happen at a corner. They're going to hit it in the middle. You've got to jump and defend and head it away. And no one did that. And it's especially galling after Taguchi had made that really good save a minute or two earlier.
The one interesting stat that Dazon flashed up was that in the 75th minute of this match, they put on screen, Ryukyu had conceded 6 goals in the final 15 minutes of matches. So now, obviously, that's 8 goals this season. And that's the sort of problem that will keep them down in the relegation battle, I think, because you can't keep conceding late goals. You score 3 against a team like Tokushima, you've got to make it count. You can't.
Well,
it's really frustrating for Ryukyu supporters.
Well, it must be frustrating for Ryukyu supporters, because it's frustrating for, I think, any neutral watching it as well, because you're shouting at the TV, "What are you doing?" I mean, on the Lee Yongjik point, I mean, we discussed him many a time. I'm not sure what his best position. He's a good player. I'm just not sure that centre back is really where he shines. And I have to say, I think I could probably manage one good game out of 19 if you put me in. So, you know, perhaps not anything to hang your hat on too much there. I think not to pick on him individually, because it's, I think Ryukyu's defensive problems are not just down to him. It's to do with the whole team, isn't it? But the bottom line is, if you're asking the team to, you know, you need to score 4 goals to win a home game, that is not going to get you very high up the table. I mean, Akita usually need 1 goal to win a home game, you know, for example. Kanazawa maybe two to win a home game. That's doable. Asking the team to score four times to win a home game is not going to get you. It's not going to happen all that often, is it? And I wonder if they're almost hurt by having, you know, an embarrassment of riches in terms of goalkeepers, right? Like Junto Taguchi is a really good goalie. There's Danny Carvajal around, and is the third choice, I think, is injured, but is it Inose, the other goalkeeper?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, that sort of trio of goalkeepers is one of the, I think, probably one of the best sort of, in terms of strength and depth, that's one of the best sort of trios in the league for goalkeepers. So I wonder if it's almost the case of, like, they're just like, well, we've got a good goalkeeper, so we don't need to worry too much about the guys, you know, directly in front of them. With the evidence of this season is that's not the case. You know, they do need to put a bit more work in on the training pitch defensively. But I don't know. I mean, I think you could cut a sort of highlights reel of this game that makes Ryukyu look absolutely brilliant. If you show those goals, I mean, we should talk about, you know, the two goals they scored in the second half, absolutely brilliant. But then you could put a cut together of where, I mean, the first goal, they've given a penalty away, and even the second one where I don't know what, you know, Keita Tanaka, very experienced player, and he is a right back by trade. You know, what is he doing, sort of, for want of a better word, fanny around with it there at that point? You know, it just doesn't... It doesn't make any sense. I don't know. I don't know, James. I think I'd give Ryukyu a much better chance than Iwate of getting out of it. But in the table, it's funny, isn't it? Completely different teams, completely different play style, but they've ended up with, I think they both got 14 points so far, right? So they're obviously...
Ryukyu, they got 15, I think.
Got 15.
I agree. I don't know. Yeah, Ryukyu seem... Their games are much more kind of open than Iwate's games, right? Iwate... tend to, if they seem like a team that will grind out results, whereas Ryukyu are kind of going to go big, and that means that they might score a lot, but they'll concede a lot. They've got the worst defense in the league. Mm. Yeah, they have got the worst. They conceded 35 goals. It's more than Iwate, more than Verdi, who... We're
not
going to talk about their defense in a few minutes.
Well, I don't want to sound bloodthirsty, but you sort of get the... I get the feeling that possibly a different... I think with Iwate, with their squad, I'm not sure how much more you could squeeze out of that group than what Yutaka Akita is getting out of them right now. Whereas when I look at the Ryukyu squad, I mentioned, I think they've got good goalkeepers. You've mentioned the midfield, and the strikers are doing well. I just wonder if... and Tatsuhiro Kina, who's in charge at the moment, seems like a lovely man, so I've nothing against him personally, but I'm just wondering if, like, he must turn his phone off, you know, on Monday mornings for a couple of hours, because, you know, I think another manager could get more out of that group of players. I don't know, that's a bit harsh, but it's the impression I get anyway.
Yeah, well, like Higuchi, for example.
Oh, yeah, what's he doing now? Who knows with him? Yeah, let's talking of not getting the best out of your squad, James, perhaps we should move on to game three from our pick of the week this week. So from Saturday evening, Tokyo Verdy 1, Omiya 1, very much a game of two halves, this, I think, for the new Omiya boss, Naoki Soma. The second half performance from his team, much, much better than the first. To be honest, in the first period, there wasn't much excitement from either side, was there, apart from Tokyo Verdy taking the lead through Taiga Ishiura in the 27th minute, a shot that was deflected off Omiya centre-back Keisuke Nishimura. Now, I've been thinking about sort of team of the first half of the season. It's been difficult to pick centre-backs, but if I could pick a sort of, you know, clangers, you know, team of sort of, you know, what losers isn't fair, underperforming centre-backs, I think Nishimura and Lee Yong-jik could be my two sort of centre-backs that are kind of guaranteed to be causing havoc. But anyway, it was 1-0 to Verdy at half-time. In the second half, though, Omiya were pretty much on top for the majority. They got a deserved equaliser just before the hour when Atsushi Kawata played the ball cross-field to Kanji Okunuki, who took a touch to control, another to set himself, and then brilliantly swept the ball in for 1-1. I have to say, it wasn't a vintage Okunuki performance on the night, but you can't really criticise a player who's scored a goal. I suppose it looked like Omiya were going to go on and win this, actually, and they came close. Masato Kojima rattling the crossbar with a shot that would have been an absolutely sensational goal if it had gone in, but it wasn't to be, and it was Tokyo Verdy 1, Omiya 1 full time. James, what do you think of the game? And am I right about Keisuke Nishimura? Is he as lazy as he looks?
Well, he was there, wasn't he? That was a pretty pretty pathetic bit of defending. Yeah, Omiya, they've got their new manager, haven't they? But just from this one game, it's hard to tell how much of an impact he's going to have, because this was kind of more of the same from Omiya, wasn't it? There, the poor defending leading to a goal conceded, then plenty of effort in the second half to try and salvage something. We saw all of that under the previous manager, under Shimoda as well. And so obviously the new manager will need a bit more time to make changes to the style and the mentality if he's able to.
But I think probably, I don't speak, maybe I speak too soon, but you would think that Omiya have enough quality in their squad to survive, but they do have a habit of shooting themselves in the foot, like they did in the first half here and for much of last season. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're still in trouble near the end of the season. Speaking of pathetic defending, I think it must be frustrating being a Ryukyu supporter, but it must be also incredibly frustrating being a Verdy supporter, because they've got so much attacking talent, but not a clue defensively. You could see it in the game against Niigata in Golden Week and against Kanazawa last Wednesday. When things are going well, they're all really happy to get forwards and, you know, have a go, try and score, and they're all having fun up in the opposition box. But they make very little effort to get back and defend. For example, in this game, Omiya managed to get from deep in their own half to the edge of the Verdy area in two passes. There were hardly any defenders around to stop them from scoring. Kanazawa's second goal last week against Verdy, there were seven Verdy players in the Kanazawa area. So Kanazawa, quick three one-touch passes, and Shimada was away one-on-one with a defender and he scored. I think it reminds me of when me and my mates used to play football on the school field at lunchtime. Everyone would want to go and attack and have the glory of scoring a goal, and no one could be asked to defend. That's exactly what it is like watching Verdy. And now they've only got one win in their last 11. They're sliding down the table. I think, I don't know if it's the players' attitudes to blame or the manager to blame or both. Maybe the manager's not strong enough to change their attitudes, although you don't want to go too far the other way, because that's what happened with the previous manager. But I think, for Verdy, this will be more of the same, because I had a look at the last few years. Last year, they had 16 wins and 16 losses, 62 goals scored and 66 against. The year before, 13 wins, 14 losses, 48 goals for against. 2019, 14 wins, 15 losses, 59 goals scored, 59 goals against. At the moment, they've got 33-33. I think they're going to end up with the same, probably one of the best attacks, but one of the worst defences. Maybe that's their place in J2. Their role in the league is to be that team in that position. But with the amount of the academy is really good, and the amount of talent they produce, especially in attack, I really feel like they should be doing more. But if they steadfastly refuse to do anything about the defence, then they won't do more.
Yeah, it's funny that we are talking a lot about central defenders. I had a free hour to watch the first half. I didn't get to watch the second half, but I watched the first half of this game. And Verdy set up, their two centre-backs were Tomohiro Taira, who I think has only just come back from injury. I hadn't seen him recently, so I'm not sure if this was his first game back or maybe he's played a couple of games. And his partner in central defence, and I use the term advisedly, was Nduka Boniface. And then if you look at Omiya's back four, their centre backs were the aforementioned Keisuke Nishimura and Masayuki Yamada. And James, I think only Tomohiro Taira would have a chance of getting into my team if I was picking a team. I don't think any of these other defenders are particularly convincing. I mean, back, switching to Omiya for a second, Nishimura just looks not really at it, to be honest. He doesn't look at the level for me. And then I think Yamada, didn't really notice him do anything too egregious, but there was that one that he hacked somebody down like midway inside there. Did you see that? Like, just went straight through the back of somebody for no reason. It was like a wrong button, you know, the wrong button on the PlayStation controller, sort of, you know. And honestly, like, it was an innocuous enough challenge. I think it was just clumsy and stupid rather than malicious, but you could be sent off for that. You know, tackle from behind like that, that was just, like, so unnecessary. It was just like, I just wanted to say, what are you doing? Like, you're not gonna win the ball, and even if you did, it's not worth the risk of fouling because the guy you're marking is on the half. And I think it was Jin Hanato as well. And I mean, talking about Birdie's attack, I mean, Jin Hanato wasn't the answer last year or the year before that. It's very hard to believe he's going to be the answer this year. You know, he's not particularly mobile or effective, I don't think. So, yeah, it was a weird game. And you saw two teams that were kind of like not really firing in the first half, certainly. We should mention it was incredibly hot and humid in Tokyo on the weekend. But even taking that into account, I thought they'd be pretty drab and disappointing first half. So, yeah, Verdi, a lot to ponder, I think. And for Omiya as well, we'll see how they go. You'd imagine they're going to be a lot more solid under Naoki Sommer, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of what he's supposed to bring. But I don't see Nishimura and Yamada at centre-back. Solid isn't the first word that comes into my mind. So I just wonder if there might be some rotation there or some movements. Perhaps even Naoki Sommer might be looking to bring a player or two in that position. That's what I'd be looking for. And on Omiya, you mentioned they should have enough quality to climb up the table a bit. I totally agree. But we said that last year, and I'm still waiting on some. There's some players I'm losing patience with now, and Okinuki is one of them. Because there's all the ability, you know, in the world, doesn't he, really? But that first half, he just didn't want to take anybody on, didn't want to run at anybody, didn't want to do anything, really. And I can see why Masato Kojima is such a popular player with Omiya supporters, even though he's not a star player by any means. But it's because when he gets on the ball, he tries to drive the team forward with it, and he tries to pass the ball forward, whereas most of the other players want to pass it backwards or sideways, not because it's the best pass, but because they either don't know how to move it forward, or it's too much effort. And I think him, Kojima, and probably Atsushi Kawata, the two players who have, you know, emerged with the most credits so far this year.
Yeah.
I think for the rest of them, it's like, and Okinuki, this is probably his third season. You know, he should be breaking out now, and he has the potential to turn games like Shion Honma turns games for Niigata, but never does it. And I've got a bit more time for, is it Shibayama on the other flank? Because yeah, like he's younger. Yeah, he's younger and he's newer, but I'm still waiting for, like, you know, the guy has a lot of hype, and, you know, the team that he plays for is third bottom. So I'm just like, I think I agree with you. I'm not saying you're wrong. I think they do have enough quality to climb up the table, but the quality is in these players who are consistently not really doing it, I think.
So, well, I don't know about climb up the table, but to survive, I mean, they might hang on in 20th.
Climb up the table marginally to 19th. You finish 19th. There you go, John, I told you. No, I think I agree. I think Verdi and Omiya are both going to be okay, but we might be in for a season of... For their supporters anyway, perhaps a bit of dissatisfaction or discontent. And I think for Verdi and Omiya, you know, we might enter as the season sort of rumbles on, and whenever safety is you know, confirmed for both of them. I think there is perhaps a conversation to be had about sort of where do they go from here, you know, because Verdi have been in the playoffs in the not too distant past, right? Two or three, maybe three, against Omiya, in fact, you know, we're perhaps going back 3 years, 4 years since the last time the playoffs were around. So they do seem to be heading in the wrong direction results-wise from those. You know, they're going to seem like kind of halcyon days, aren't they, at this rate, of them being together in the playoffs. So we'll see. Okay. Wow, lots of negativity tonight, James. I really enjoyed that.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I've had to be pretend to be nice to a lot of people at work this week. So, being nasty about football teams has been cathartic for me. But I think you're right to point out, though, for Ryukyu, there were lots of positives. And I think... Omiya's second half performance will give them a lot of positives to draw on as well, because I think they, from what I could see, and I just watched the highlights of this stuff, they pretty much had Verdi on the rack, and if that Masato Kojima shot goes in instead of hitting the crossbar, I think they probably would have won that game 2-1, and then perhaps the narrative would be very different, and we'd be like, oh, Soma's got them, you know, turn it around straight away. So the margins are very fine, aren't they, at the bottom?
Got to play for a full game, though. That's the problem. Playing well for half's not enough.
Well, I mean, you know, this is kind of the problem with these teams at the bottom, isn't it? I mean, Ryukyu can't, you know, Ryukyu needing to score four goals to win a game at home, and Omiya are giving the other team... This has been a problem with Omiya for years, that they can't string two halves together. You know, you've plenty of games where they've gone, you know, 3-0 up, and then it comes back to 3-3 or whatever. So, we'll see. Naoki Sommer, I don't associate him, and I don't think Machida supporters associate him with kind of that swashbuckling, you know, champagne football, it's fair to say. So I think things will be, I think Almir are heading more in the Iwate direction than the Rikyu direction in terms of play style. But we'll wait to see. Lots to ponder, I suppose.
Mm.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, James. All good stuff. We'll leave it there before we annoy anybody else. So but stay tuned. We'll in a minute. You're going to hear me round up the rest of the round 19 action from the weekend, including lots of late winners for the teams at the top. After that, James and I are going to get back together. We're going to look at the round 20 fixtures coming up this weekend. Hi again, everyone. John Steele here again, rounding up all of the other J2 action from round 19 last weekend. There was no changer in the top three, who all won. Leaders Sendai had to dig very deep to see off a spirited Tochigi side at Yurtec Stadium, winning 2-1 thanks to a late goal from Yusuke Minagawa. Tochigi, despite playing in their pretty horrible grey away kit, played very well in the first half and it was 0-0 at half time. But Sendai took the lead about 10 minutes into the second half when Masashi Wakasa was able to poke home a low cross from Motohiko Nakajima. There were some great saves from the Tochigi goalkeeper Shuhei Kawata after that, including one superb double save when he ended up getting clattered into the goalpost by Minagawa. It seemed like Wakasa's goal was going to be enough to seal the 3 points for Sendai, but with just 5 minutes left, who else but Kisho Yano headed in the equaliser for Tochigi. But, you know, Sendai are a good side in good form at the moment, and they produced the winner in the 88th minute. A corner kick from Yasushi Endo wasn't dealt with very well by the Tochigi defence, and Kaito Suzuki could only head it straight to Minagawa, who controlled and fired in from close range to make it Sendai 2, Tochigi 1 at full time. So, yeah, Sendai stay top. Tochigi are in 19th, 6 points clear of the relegation zone. Niigata in second place are hot on Sendai's heels after a pretty comprehensive 3-0 win over Yamagata. This was a very commanding Niigata performance with Yamagata under the cosh for most of the 90 minutes. Just before the half hour, Niigata went in front thanks to a fine counter-attack. Yoshiaki Takagi played in Shion Honma down the left flank and his cross was perfect for Koji Tezuki to head on goal. His effort was saved by Masaaki Goto, but Eitaro Matsuda was following up to score and make it 1-0. Around the hour mark, Suzuki and Honma combined again for a crucial second goal. They played a nice 1-2 on the edge of the Yamagata box, and Honma fired in from about 18 yards. Yamagata's keeper Goto needed to make several good saves after that to keep the score down, but he was less than impressive, unfortunately, when conceding the third goal in the 79th minute. Daichi Tagami heading in a corner at the far post under very little pressure, really, it has to be said. We should also mention the big crowd at the Big Swan for this game, 19,008. Great stuff, and Niigata sort of getting back to pre-COVID levels, it seems, in terms of attendances. Three straight wins for Niigata. Yamagata dropped down to sixth, although this was a first defeat in 9 games for them, so I don't think they'll be too worried. The final score was Niigata 3, Yamagata 0. Yokohama FC are still third, level on points with Niigata. They just about got past Yamaguchi at Mitsuzawa, winning 1-0 thanks to an 89th minute goal from Masashi Kamekawa. This game didn't really spark into life until the last 20 minutes when the home side started to really go for it. Henan had to clear off the goal line to keep Yokohama FC out, and Kazuma Watanabe should have scored for the home team when Ryoya Yamashita sent him clean through. But Yamaguchi's goalkeeper Kento Oseki, an ex-Yokohama FC player of course, made a good save. It seemed like the breakthrough wasn't going to come, but then in the 89th minute, Yamashita's cross found an unmarked Kamakawa at the back post. He took a touch to control and then fired into the roof of the net to make it Yokohama FC 1, Yamaguchi 0. Yokohama in third, but a full 9 points clear of fourth place at the moment. Yamaguchi in a bit of a slump, 3 straight defeats for them in 18th. Machida Zelvia are up to 4th after their 3rd win in 4 matches, this time 2-0 at home to Akita. Dudu went close to giving Machida the lead early on, but Akita keeper Yudai Tanaka made a sharp save, as he often does. but the hosts did go in front from the penalty spot on the half hour. Chong Teze got in front of Ryuji Saito as the Akita defender prepared to clear, and basically the net result was that Saito kicked Teze up the arse for a penalty, which Teze got up and scored himself. It was 2-0 to Machida in first half stoppage time. A thumping drive from Dudu right into the roof of the net from a tight angle inside the penalty area. A great strike from him. And there were nearly more goals for Machida in the second half. They had a header cleared off the line. And late on, Vinicius Araujo saw his low shot come back off the post. But it finished Machida 2, Akita 0. Akita fairly comfortably in 13th in the latest league table. Fagiano Okayama picked up a useful point from their trip to Nagasaki. This game finished 0-0. Nagasaki definitely on top in terms of possession and chances, and they almost won it late on when Shunya Yoneda hit the base of the post from just outside the penalty area with a good strike. But it finished Nagasaki 0, Okayama 0. Okayama on the fringes of the playoff zone in 8th place, and Nagasaki sort of there or thereabouts in 12th. Elsewhere in J2 over the weekend, 11th placed Oita got their first win in 6 matches, 1-0 away at Gunma, with a goal from Arata Watanabe midway through the first half. A cross from Masaki Yumiba was deflected off Gunma's Yuzo Iwakami, and Watanabe was on hand to head the ball powerfully past Masatoshi Kushibiki in the Gunma goal. After that, Oita needed to defend very well to preserve their lead. Brazilian centre-back Pereira made a good block on the goal line from Koki Kazama, and goalkeeper Shun Takagi made a string of fine saves, including one from point-blank range from a Shu Hiramatsu header. So Oita just about earned the 3 points. It finished Gunma 0, Oita 1. That's 3 straight defeats for Gunma, who were in 17th place in the table on 22 points. There was plenty of entertainment at Fukuda Denshi Arena in Soga, where Jeff Chiba eventually beat Mito 2-1. Mito went in front, though, in the 12th minute with an absolutely stunning goal from their captain, Ryo Nisato, who took aim and lashed a 20-yard thunderbolt in off the crossbar, quite reminiscent of Yu Tomidokoro's goal for Ryukyu in this round as well. But Jeff had turned the game around by half-time, thanks to goals from Keita Buanika and Tomoya Miki. Firstly, in the 21st minute, a nice backheel from Thiago De Leonso set up Buanica for a venomous strike from just inside the penalty area for 1-1. And then in the 38th minute, a powerful shot from Thiago from outside the box was spilled out to the penalty spot by Mito's goalie Luis Yamaguchi, and Miki was able to collect it and then slide the ball between two defenders who were trying to block from about 12 yards and made it Jeff Chiba 2, Mito 1. And that's how it stayed, thanks to a very late and very good saves from Jeff's keeper Shota Arai. He did brilliantly to keep out a header from Mizuki Ando from a Mito corner right at the death. So yeah, Jeff Chiba 2, Mito 1 at full time. 2 straight wins for Jeff, who move up to 10th in the table. 2 straight defeats for Mito in 16th. And finally, from round 19, the game between Kumamoto and Kofu finished 1-1 on Saturday afternoon. In the 13th minute, Kofu went in front thanks to Willian Lira. He headed in a corner after some pretty poor goalkeeping from Kumamoto's Yuya Sato, it has to be said. But Kumamoto levelled 10 minutes into the second half. Yuhi Takemoto was completely unmarked in the penalty area to tap in a low cross from Kohei Kuroki from out wide on the right. Both sides went all out to try and get a winner after that. Kofu had a couple of half-decent penalty shouts, I think, one for a shirt pull and one for a handball, but nothing was given. And late on, Kazushi Mitsuhira hit the crossbar with a header for Kofu. So they nearly snatched it 2-1, but they couldn't score. At the other end, visiting Kofu goalkeeper Kohei Kawata made a great save from Koki Sakamoto. So it finished 1-1, and I think on the balance of play and the chances, that was a fair result. Kumamoto going very nicely in 5th place, with Kofu sort of in and around the playoff spots as usual in 9th. Okay, I think that's all the J2 action from round 19 rounded up then. So yeah, please stay tuned. In a moment, you're going to hear me talking to James again, and we're going to be previewing all the weekend round 20 action that's coming up. So yeah, stay tuned. J2 Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. That's all the round 19 action rounded up, I think. But yeah, James is with me again to talk about the round 20 games coming up this weekend. Before I get any of your thoughts, James, we should mention that the Emperor's Cup second round is coming up very quickly, isn't it? Wednesday night, June the 1st, lots of games taking place involving J2 and J3 teams. So we're not going to go in depth on that because I think by the time people listen to this pod, those games already have been played. But what I will say is that we are planning to do some kind of Emperor's Cup roundup to drop sort of at the end of the week for podcast listeners. So yeah, no big Emperor's Cup preview, but we will be dropping some kind of a roundup of the round two games later this week. And yeah, one more kind of item on the agenda, James. You were informing me earlier the J-League has finally taken away in the league table for J2 Okayama's 3 points from the match at Yamagata, the one where they won 1-0, but Masaki Goto, the goalkeeper, was wrongly sent off. So that game has now been annulled, and they're going to replay from the 11th minute, is that right, when the goalkeeper was sent off? So yeah, they haven't announced when that game is going to be replayed, which is kind of annoying because it's sort of pretty crucial information. But yes, Okayama... the 3 points that they had in the table have been taken away for now, pending the rest of that game being replayed. So round 20 then, James, just two games coming up on Saturday, June the 4th, but it's second place and in hot form Niigata go to Tokushima, and a big game in your part of the world, I suppose, Okayama against Kanazawa, and that's 8th versus 7th at the moment now, isn't it, after the after Okayama had their 3 points taken away. So, I suppose you're going to have a close eye on the Okayama-Kanazawa game, but what about Niigata away at Tokushima?
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting one. Tokushima, they need to start winning, don't they, before their season kind of peters out into irrelevance, because we're just about halfway through. And they've only won 4 games.
Mm.
But they've also only lost 4 games because they keep drawing. Mm. And if they don't start winning, they're just going to... The season's never going to get going. Or it will get going, but it'll be too late. And so... And playing Niigata is not an easy... Obviously not an easy task.
Mm.
But they've got to do something sometime. And... Yeah, Niigata have been really good to watch. I've enjoyed what I've seen of them this year.
Mm.
And so I think that this will be... It will be interesting to see how, you know, Niigata, they've got a lot of really good attacking players, how they get on against Tokushima's defence, which, although they conceded 3 to Ryukyu, is still the best in the league in terms of goals against. So I think that will be a very interesting matchup. And yeah, of course, I'm going to be focusing on Okayama against Kanazawa. And particularly interested to see whether Kanazawa's counter-attack will work against Okayama's defence, because Okayama have also got a very good defence, and they've got Boyce and Yanagi as their centre-back pairing, who are very good, both of them. But yeah, Kanazawa have been really good away from home, so... Hopefully that will continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing I forgot to mention is that Okayama are going to be missing Mitch Duke, right? The Australian striker. Mm-hmm. Because he's called up for the kind of international games that are going on in early June. And also, one or two teams are going to be missing players, aren't they, from the Japan squad, because the Under-23 Asian Cup is about to kick off in Qatar, UAE, Tajikistan, somewhere abroad. And since one or two teams, like Riku Hando is going to be missing, isn't he, for Yamagata? And I think Verdi have got Rihito Yamamoto and Baba, the defender, missing as well. So one or two teams are going to be a little bit light on numbers this weekend. So that might give Kanazawa some hope as well, James. How about the games on Sunday, June the 5th? This is when the other 9 fixtures are coming up. So leader Sendai go away to Jeff Chiba. Third place Yokohama FC host Tokyo Verdy, who are sort of 14th in the table at the moment. Machida, who are up in fourth, they go away to Oita. And there's Akita against Kumamoto. Yamagata hosting second bottom Ryukyu. Bottom side Iwate host Kofu. I think Kofu are on a run of 5 straight draws, so it'll be interesting to see what happens in that one. And other games to keep an eye on: Omiya, Naoki Sommer's first home game in charge is against Mito. So hopefully Keisuke Nishimura gets a good night's sleep before that one. Mm-hmm. Yamaguchi against Gunma is also on the slate, and Tochigi hosts Nagasaki. James hit you with 9 games in quick succession there, which is probably not ideal. Apologies. Which one or two would you like to pick out?
I think Jeff against Sendai would be interesting, because obviously Sendai are having a lot of fun up at the top of the league. Jeff are suddenly on a good run again. The last time I paid any attention to them, they were on a bad run. They were down in 18th or something. Now they're up in 10th and they're unbeaten in 3. So they seem to be back to their normal selves. So that's good to see. Yamaguchi against Gunma might be interesting, because those two, I mean, they're both on a run of 3 losses, but they've both been kind of quietly impressive in spurts this season. Although at the moment they're sort of lower down the table and not on a good run, but I think that could be interesting. And one more, Akito and Kumamoto, I think will be interesting as well, because they're quite contrasting styles. Kumamoto quite open and attacking, whereas Akita, you know, keep things tight and generally strong defensively. And I think it will be interesting to see how their styles match up.
Well, yeah, I think Akita Kumamoto is a good shout, because Kumamoto have been in pretty hot form in the last few games, haven't they, especially going forward. So give Akita a good test. Like you said, they like to keep things very tight and neat and tidy at the back, don't they? So I think that'll be a good game. For some reason, I feel like Tochigi are going to win against Nagasaki, but I have nothing to base this on other than the fact that Tochigi are nicking a couple of 1-0 wins recently, and Nagasaki for some reason seem to not be scoring freely. So I don't know why. I've just got a sneaky feeling Tochigi might be winning 1-0 against Nagasaki. Sorry to Daniel if he's listening. it's nothing personal. Just a feeling I get. Yeah, Oita against Machida also could be a good one, because Machida, they're in good form right now as well, but you just never quite know. I'm never quite convinced. I think Oita could give them a problem or two. Basically, I'm just mentioning all the games that you didn't mention here, James. Kofu, another team that doesn't always convince. Could Iwate give them something to think about? Is something to keep an eye on. Jeff against Sendai are in such good form that you kind of imagine they're going to win that game, but it is the kind of game where Jeff would turn up, isn't it? You know, it's not Jeff against Ehime, where you know that Ehime are going to win 1-0. Or it's not Jeff against Akita, where you know that Akita are going to win. It's Jeff against like a team that they perhaps wrongly would consider as like an equal, or, you know, a fellow sort of big J2 side. So I think Jeff will be up for that one. It's going to be interesting. But perhaps we should factor in, you know, quite a few of all of these teams have got a midweek game, haven't they, where they'll obviously rotate players. I think they'll rest players for the Emperor's Cup in midweek, but that could lead to some changed squads and maybe a slightly different kind of a different atmosphere for some of these games. But I think, yeah, there's sure to be something interesting whichever game we tune into. So lots to look forward to. As ever. Thanks a lot, James. Always good to talk. I've kept you way past your bedtime, I think, so we'll leave it there if that's okay. But we'll say before we finish, thanks as always for listening and downloading the pod, and an extra special thanks to the JTalk Pod patrons as well. We really appreciate all the support and the good vibes you send our way. But that's all for me and James for now. Stay tuned though. Magic Mike Innes is going to be up in a moment. He's got all the J3 latest in JTalk Short Corner.
J-talk Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this bumper episode, I'll be looking back on all the J3 games played since last midweek, as well as previewing J3 clubs' participation in this midweek's Emperor's Cup second round ties, and the round 11 games coming up at the weekend. Busy week, but first some items of J3 news since the last pod. There's been a change of coach at YSCC Yokohama. The club report Kenji Nakada, who's been suffering from ill health in recent weeks, has resigned, but they've moved quickly to appoint a replacement in Kei Hoshikawa. For Nakada, this was his first job as the man in charge, having previously been on the coaching staff at FC Gifu, and results have not gone his way. Nakada departs YSCC with a record of 2 draws and 7 losses in 9 league games. Hoshikawa, on the other hand, has just won the inaugural season of the Wii League as coach of Inac Lionessa Kobe, and in making the switch from the women's game, follows in the footsteps of Naoto Otake, coach of current J3 High Flyers Kagoshima United. Interesting times ahead for YSCC. Meanwhile, SC Sagamihara's new coach, Norihiro Satsukawa, has made immediate use of the loan market, bringing in Tochigi SC left-back Yukuto Omoya until the end of the season. And FC Imabari have announced 2 loan signings, teenage forward Kanta Chiba from Shimizu S-Pulse and goalkeeper Shu Mogi. Mogi's parent club is Cerezo Osaka, but he's spent the early part of the season loaned to Mito Hollyhock. Mogi has been signed as cover for Haruhiko Takimoto, who's done his ACL and is likely to be out for the rest of the season. And regular listeners may recall Gainane Tottori defender Kosuke Masutani being stretchered off during his team's defeat to Gifu a couple of weeks ago. Tottori reports Masutani has damaged his arm and they expect the injury-prone player to be out for 2 or 3 months. On with the action now, and Wednesday the 25th saw the rearranged fixture between Tottori and Ehime FC. Beforehand, Kim Jong-song described the 4-0 cup loss to Beraspar Oita as the lowest point in Gainane's history. His team selection for this game had the feel of throwing everything up in the air and seeing where it landed, but whatever combination he tries, there's still no sign of progress with the defence, of which more in a moment, as in fairness, I should mention the sumptuous 20th minute volley with which Gainane's Taiki Arai hit the bar direct from a Kosuke Chiku corner. Seconds later though, Ehime's Reiya Morishita played a conventional long ball into the box and neither Chiku or Hibiki Nagai cut it out or tracked back, leaving Motoki Ohara with a comfortable lob over Koshiro Itohara for 1-0. Just after the hour, the visitors made it 2, unmarked Kyoji Kutsuna able to cross from the Ehime right, Takashi Kondo headed it on at the near post for Kohei Shin to slide in and finish. Nagai, Sota Maruyama and Riku Kobayashi all seemingly averse to making an intervention. Yo Okubo pulled one back from the penalty spot with 12 minutes left after he'd been upended by Toshiya Takagi. And as Gainane pressed for an equaliser, Nagai headed against the bar from a Chiku free kick. But the game ended Tottori 1, Ehime 2. Gainane's defensive woes still rendering them ineffective. Ehime might not be the most potent side in the division, but here they took advantage and took the points. Then, over the weekend of the 28th and 29th, we reached round 10 of the J3 season. Just one game on Saturday the 28th, and that saw Kei Hoshikawa, only 3 days after being appointed, take his YSCC Yokohama side to Gidamansu Kitakyushu. No ringing the changes in terms of the starting lineup for Hoshikawa, whose new team were quickly under pressure from a Takeaki Harigaya corner, headed against the bar by Kotaro Fujikawa, with Yuya Takezawa's follow-up cleared off the line by the calm Hiroto Miyauchi. And in the 33rd minute, a mistimed interception by YSCC's Kei Munechika gifted a chance to Yuki Nakayama, but he couldn't lift the ball over keeper Ryo Ishii. In injury time, Kitakyushu still pressing for the opener, Harigaya hit the post with a free kick, Nakayama heading the rebound wide from 5 yards out, but somehow the visitors kept it at 0-0 by the break. And then, In the 62nd minute, YSCC took the lead. A good team move leading to a neat exchange of passes between Tomoya Hayashi and Diego Taba, who outfought Fujikawa and set up Hayashi to tuck home from 7 yards. From then on, despite Giravant's coach Kenichi Amano throwing on the Ryo Sato, Taiga Maekawa and Zen Cardona, the visitors saw the game out. Final score, Kitakyushu 0, YSCC 1. Giravanti's run without scoring a single goal extends to 6 matches and their confidence looks shot. YSCC rode their luck at times but made and took one chance, meaning the Hoshikawa era starts with a win. Then on Sunday the 29th, there was an uncomplicated afternoon for leaders Kagoshima United at Kamatamare Sanuki. Kagoshima were 2 up inside 10 minutes. Corky Arita opening the scoring with an angled drive after Takaharu Nishino had fluffed an attempt to block Rei Yonezawa's through ball. Yonezawa then doubling the lead with another attack down the Kagoshima left, skipping past Ikki Kawasaki and Genichi Endo before firing into the top corner. 10 minutes before the break, it was 3-0. Senoki's Yusuke Yoshii, on his full pro debut, bundling Eisuke Watanabe to the ground to concede a penalty. Arita converting the spot kick for his 6th of the season. Naoto Otake's men confirmed the win in the 57th minute, Watanabe crossing to the far post for Yonezawa to knock it back for Frank Romero, who evaded the challenges of Endo and Masataka Nishimoto before scoring with his right foot. Final score, Senoki 0, Kagoshima 4. Kamatamare's defence reverting to the bad old days of 2021, Kagoshima confident, assured, a cut above. What about the chasing trio? Matsumoto Yamaga kept up the pressure with a win over FC Imabari on a hot afternoon at the SunPro Alwyn Stadium. 2 more young forwards making the most of the absence of Ayumu Yokoyama, who's in France with the Japan under-19 squad. Itsuki Enomoto, starting his first league match of the season, latched on to a long clearance by keeper Victor, shrugged off Takuro Uehara and slotted in to give Yamaga a 10th minute lead. The visitors did manage to draw level 9 minutes later, Marcus Indio catching Masato Tokida in possession to set up a counter-attack, which ended when Takatora Kondo set up Kazaki Nakagawa to finish with a low shot from 20 yards. Soon afterwards, a similar blunder by Tokida presented Marcus Indio with a golden chance, but he screwed his shot past the post and still awaits his first goal for Imabari. 7 minutes before the break, a defensive mishap at the other end gave the lead back to Matsumoto. Rookie Yusuke Kikui robbing Tomoya Ando of possession and beating Shinji Okada for his first pro goal. In the second half, Imabari introduced both 40-year-old Yuichi Komono and new signing Kanta Chiba, 22 years his junior, but to no avail, and it finished Matsumoto 2, Imabari 1. Not a classic of defensive solidity. Yamaga nicking the win with poacher's goals, Imabari uncharacteristically bringing about their own downfall. Iwaki FC, meanwhile, remain level on points with Matsumoto following their home win over Gainare Tottori. Before going in front, Iwaki twice hit the bar, first when a Riku Saga cross set up a header for Shota Suzuki, then when Daigo Furukawa flicked Masaru Hidaka's low cross up onto the woodwork and over. And Gainare too came close to getting their noses in front, a Yu Okubo volley bringing a good save out of Shuhei Shikano before Daichi Ishikawa's improvised overhead cannoned off the crossbar. Iwaki broke the deadlock 8 minutes before half-time, a surging run down the left by Hiroto Iwabuchi exposing the Tottori back line. Koshiro Itohana got a hand to Iwabuchi's shot, but Suzuki nodded in the rebound for 1-0. The home side made it two on the hour with one of the goals of the round. A slick passing move culminating in rookie Sotan Nagai setting up Kotaro Arima to finish in the roof of the net from 15 yards. The closest the match came to another goal was when Suzuki headed a Yuto Yamashita corner straight at Itohara, while Gainare were kept very quiet. Final score, Iwaki 2, Tottori 0. The home side's dynamism up front, the decisive factor. Gainare with some attacking ideas, but no defensive strength. Matsumoto and Iwaki might have kept pace with Kagoshima, but Fukushima United dropped points via a draw with Tegevajano Miyazaki. Staged at Fukushima's occasional home ground at Aizu Wakamatsu, the game saw Miyazaki's ex-Fukushima goalkeeper Shunsuke Ueda and former international striker Masato Kudo return after injury. It was a match of missed chances on both sides, the nearest thing to a goal being Yuki Okada's late free kick for Tegevajano, which beat Kaito Yamamoto, hit the bar and bounced down in front of the line. Final score, Fukushima 0, Miyazaki 0. Not one to look back on with pleasure for Junya Takahashi or Shoki Nagano. A sixth draw in 10 games for Tegevajano. So, who are the closest challengers to the top four now? Well, after their Shizuoka Derby win against Azul Claro Numazu, it's Fujieda MyFC. Daisuke Sudo's team roared out of the blocks to take the lead on 7 minutes. Ekiyuki Yokoyama turning Ryoma Kita inside out before sending in a cross that was flicked on by Jun Suzuki for Taisuke Mizuno to finish from 15 yards. Early on in the game, Yokoyama proved a nightmare for the Azul Claro defence, setting up good chances for Tomoyuki Doi and Tojiro Kubo. But against the run of play, Numazu drew level in the 22nd minute, a punt from goalkeeper Hiromu Musha opening up the MyFC defence for Kotaro Tokunaga to race into the box and set up Noah Kenshin Brown, whose less than venomous shot squeezed between Kei Uchiyama and the near post. 9 minutes later, the visitors had the chance to go in front when a long ball by Anzai similarly exposed to the home back line, but Uchiyama did well to stop Ryo Watanabe's shot. And early in the second half, Fujieda regained the advantage. Masahiko Sugita playing the ball in for Doi to set up Akiyama, whose 20-yarder beat Musha and went in off the post. Just after the hour, Musha exhibited a classic J3 meltdown, caught in possession as he tried to play sweeper-keeper and allowed the quick-thinking Ryota Iwabuchi to roll the ball into an unguarded net. Final score, Fujieda 3, Numazu 1. 10 points in 4 games now for MyFC, demonstrating the best of Sudo's attacking football. That's an approach which does provide chances for the opposition, which Azul Claro were not good enough to exploit. Like Fujieda, another team moving up the table are Ehime FC, who made it 7 unbeaten with a home win over Vanrare Hachinohe. Kenta Uchida made his first start of the season at left back for Ehime, and in the 12th minute, his corner was headed on by Riki Matsuda. Young Hachinohe defender Daichi Kobayashi couldn't make the clearance, and Reiya Morishita swept in his first goal in orange. A tidy team move saw the home side go 2 up on 34 minutes. Takashi Kondo receiving the ball in the middle and flicking it through for Motoki Ohara to sneak between Ryusei Shimodo and Kazuya Niwa to volley in. 3 in 3 games now for Ohara, potential starting to be fulfilled. Niwa and Yusei Kayanuma were involved in Vanrare's tepid attempt to get back in the game, but with 20 minutes left, Niwa was caught napping by Kyoji Kutsuna, who hurtled down the Ehime right, sent in across that eluded Hachinohe skipper Naoyuki Yamada, and was hammered into the net by Tomoya Osawa. The away side did get a consolation in injury time, substitute Kazuki Sato firing in a loose ball at the far post, but it ended Ehime 3, Hachinohe 1. The mighty Mikan's hitting form at exactly the right time. They've got a tough run of fixtures in June. 5 defeats in 5 away games now for Vanrare. Nothing going right for Masahiro Kuzuno. At home to Katare Toyama, SC Sagamihana played under Norihiro Satsukawa for the first time. The new coach introducing changes on the left-hand side, with new signing Yukito Omoya going straight into the defence and Yuan Matsuhashi returning in midfield. Not a classic, this one. The only goal of the game coming in the 8th minute when Katare's Tepe Usui swung in a free kick which went all the way across goal and crept in untouched at the far post. Final score, Sagamihana 0, Toyama 1. Satsukawa has work to do if he's to bring order to the disarray left by Takuya Takagi. Katare starting to pick up points but still far from convincing. And finally, new FC Gifu coach Yuji Yokoyama went back to the club he quit in October last year, AC Nagano Paseiro. 10 minutes before the break, a loose pass from Paseiro defender Takuya Akiyama gave Gifu the chance to go in front, the ball reaching Yoshihiro Shoji, who fed in-form Kosuke Fujioka for an easy finish from 10 yards. But if Yokoyama thought this was setting up a fifth straight win, Yuki Stauff and Nagano had other ideas. After the break, the hosts came out fired up and they drew level on 59 minutes, starting with a scintillating run by Yuya Sato, who laid it off to Takuya Miyamoto, the bustling striker seeing off Tetsuya Funatsu and Kohei Hattori before firing in a superb left foot finish. And with 14 minutes left, the Gifu defence were out-battled again. Neither Shoji or Tomoya Ugajin able to get the better of rookie Reo Yamanaka, who pounced on a loose ball, raced into the box and fired past Takuya Matsumoto. With Yokoyama staring defeat in the face, he threw on 3 substitutes, and in the 95th minute, one of them, Toma Murata, sent in a deep cross from the left-hand side that Ryo Kubota nicked in at the far post. Final score, Nagano 2, Gifu 2. Paseiro showing the soft centre that's stopping them from becoming real challengers. The Gifu back line will know they have to raise their game to climb the table. J-Talk Extra Time. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 10, noting that Hachinohe and Sagamihana have 1 game in hand. The top 4 teams are Kagoshima with 23 points, then it's Iwaki and Matsumoto with 21, and Fukushima with 19. At the other end of the table, the bottom 4 are Sagamihana in 15th with 7 points, then it's Hachinohe with 6, YSCC with 5, and slipping to the bottom with 4, Tottori. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the J3 related games over the next few days. You may know the results by now, but 5 J3 teams have Emperor's Cup second round ties on Wednesday the 1st of June, namely Kagoshima at Vivara Nagasaki, Matsumoto at Jubilo Iwata, Fukushima at Urawa Reds, Toyama at Vissel Kobe, and Gifu at Gamba Osaka. Then, over the weekend of the 4th and 5th of June, we're on to round 11 of the J3 season. Just the 2 games on Saturday the 4th. Fresh from their first win, YSCC face the challenge of a home match with Iwaki. And a vital game between 2 struggling teams. It's Sagamihana against Kitakyushu. Then, on Sunday the 5th, leaders Kagoshima are at home to Numazu. Matsumoto visit bottom side Tottori. It's 4th against 5th, Fukushima against Fujieda. A brand new derby in the J-League pitches Imabari against improving Ehime. Toyama hope to continue their move up the table with a home game against Sanuki. A close match looks likely between Miyazaki and Nagano. And can Gifu return to winning ways as they host a green derby against Hachinohe? With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.